Just watch me love myself. That's all I want. Got what I want. That's all I want. I'm not sorry.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
And this is Love to See It, an obsessively detailed recap podcast about reality dating shows like The Bachelor and other pop culture that makes us laugh, cry, and curse the patriarchy.
We can't live with these shows and we can't live without them, but we can break down every juicy moment and unpack all the weird messages these shows send us about love, sex, and dating.
Welcome to Love to See It, a podcast about golden women we deeply admire.
Specifically, a woman who can think whatever the fuck she wants. Thank you very much.
Yes, today we are joined by a true icon of the franchise, Leslie Fima, star of Golden Bachelor Season 1. Leslie, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Oh my gosh, we are so excited to have you on Love to See It. We have been huge fans of yours and we're really like felt so connected to you watching your journey on Golden Bachelor. So we're so excited to get to chat with you. To start us off, were you a Bachelor fan before you were cast on the show? I think the answer is yes, correct?
Correct. Yes, very much so. I was from day one. I was watching the show and I have said this before, it's because of Trista. I loved her so much. And I like when she walked into the mansion that day, I'm like, you are literally the reason why I'm here. Because she just got me hooked. And yeah, I've been watching. I'm not going to lie. I probably missed maybe two or three seasons along the way, but that's fair. That's about it.
That's pretty good.
There's been so many.
I know. I mean, I do have a life.
Yeah, you've got to do. No. We don't. So, you know, we have no excuse, but most people do.
I had babies in between, you know, I had kids, grandkids. I had to do some other stuff.
Did you watch Trista on the first Bachelor season or did you start watching like with, so you watched Alex Michelle's season,
from the very first moment
you were tapped in.
We revisited that season a few years ago and it was like a real wild thing to rewatch.
Crazy.
The show has changed so much since then. Well, I love that. That's so full circle because I feel like now you've really gotten to know Trista as a person.
Yeah. Oh my God. It's amazing. I mean, we're friends. I mean, you know, she's really been a very good sounding board for me. And I just feel like whenever I need, I could text her and reach out to her and she's like there in a second. It's amazing.
Makes me happy.
Oh, that's beautiful.
I know. It makes me cry almost like thinking about, you know, how I have just for so long had fallen in love with her from day one. And then here she is. And, you know, even at the finale, I just looking at her in the audience kind of like put me at ease and, you know, would just said stuff with her eyes to me. So yeah, it was great.
I mean, she is really the blueprint for your role in a way, like she's the runner up, but really won the heart of America. Yeah. And so to have her to be as a resource must be really helpful in a difficult time.
It was. It is.
How did you end up getting cast on Golden Bachelor? I mean, we all saw the many casting announcements for like 5 years. Was that what did it? Like, did you reach out?
Yeah. I mean, I did the first time I saw it. I think it was before COVID or just right before COVID. Mm-hmm. I did apply, but then COVID happened. And then when I saw it again, it was last February. I was just catching up on the show because I had been out of town. And it said, you know, during a commercial break, if you know of a senior or you are one looking for love, apply for the Golden Bachelor. And I literally took my phone and applied while I was finishing watching the show. So
wait, I love that. You were like, I volunteer as tribute. Like,
no, literally. I didn't even have my glasses near me. I'm like looking at my phone, adding pictures, trying to look at the screen to see what's going on. I mean, it was kind of funny. I thought, oh my God, I'm making so many mistakes. But
I mean, it worked. Like, was it a pretty elaborate application, or was it something you could really just do on your phone?
No, it took me. Then after the show ended, I'm still applying. It was pretty, there's a lot of questions, and I think they wanted pictures, and which are a lot easier to do from my phone than my computer. So that's kind of why I did it on my phone. And I just did it. And then that was like a Tuesday. And then Friday was at the Timberwolves basketball game. And I got a text message, some random text message saying, "We got your application. We'd love to talk to you tomorrow." And it was this girl. And I thought it was spam at first. I couldn't. I'm like,
who is punking me?
Yeah, this like, is a very specific scam targeting people who recently applied to the Golden Bachelor.
Exactly. And so I'm like, it can't be scam. I'm gonna text her back. And she's like, "Can we talk tomorrow?" And I'm like, "Yes." So it was the beginning of a process.
Wow. Yeah. They really knew what they had. They were like, "We have to text her right away and talk."
Yeah, that's a nice quick turnaround. How long was the casting process from like the point you applied to when you started filming?
February, I'd say like 15th or 16th to July 30th.
Wow.
Okay. Is when I went out to LA.
They were doing their due diligence.
Yeah. And I know that like I was on the early end of that because there was like, you know, then the girls and we all talked and some girls didn't apply till June. So.
Okay. Wow. So they were really like doing a rolling admissions situation.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
I wish I had done that because it was a long, tedious waiting, a lot of waiting, you know.
That's a lot of time to build up anticipation for the experience.
Yeah.
Like, what did you have any expectations going into filming the show? Like, what did you expect to get out of it or want to get out of it?
I just, you know, it's just kind of funny. The dating apps weren't working. So I thought I'd go on national TV, try. You know, I don't know.
Why not?
That's the classic story of,
I mean,
something different.
My kids, you know, I made my boys too watch with me all through them growing up and everything.
I love
that. So yeah, they always said, "Mom, you'd be so good on the show." My daughter's like, "You'd be so good on the show." I'm like, "But I'm not 25. And, you know, but then when they came out with this show, my daughter, "Mom, this is for you. You have to do this." So they were very, very behind me and kind of pushing me to do it. And my kids want me to be happy and want me to find somebody. And they've seen it work. They probably thought I'd have good luck on TV. I don't know. But
they manifested the show for you. They were there's going to be a Golden Bachelor.
Well, they were right.
They know you. They were like, "Our mom is going to crush it on TV." Yeah. And it's true.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was kind of fun. But yeah, I mean, it was a really great experience. The waiting period is a little, you know, hard at first because there was just a lot of times where I'd be walking with my girlfriends and they were like, you could see it in their eyes. They're like, "Here we go. We're going to talk about this again." Like, she hasn't heard. She's freaking out.
Oh my God. It's like the anxiety of dating someone, except it's like an entire television network.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I mean,
yeah, I literally don't know what I would have done without my girlfriends helping me through this. But, yeah, they were very much there for me. So,
did you know anything going into filming about the lead, or was that something that when you stepped out of the limo, you saw and learned who he was for the first time?
The only thing I knew, I think I had many meetings, you know, over Zoom, and one meeting was, I think, with the producers, and they said, "We can't really tell you about him." And I'm still being interviewed. They just said, "He's tall, handsome, and he lives on a lake." And I said, "Forget about tall and handsome. I like lakes." So
yeah, you're like, you had me at Lake House.
I'm a water girl. I live in Minnesota, landed more than 10,000 lakes. But so I was excited about that because I love lakes. And then, of course, they did the unveiling on Good Morning America. And I watched that. And that's all I knew about them. I didn't, I mean, they're, you know, the girl, we talked about it. And some of the girls like went, dove deep into Googling, into all that. And I didn't do that. I didn't listen to any podcasts he had done. I didn't Google him. I just wanted to kind of be organic and meet him for the first time, almost like a blind date, and not really know that much about him. I thought that would be probably the best way to go.
And it worked for you guys. You had this quick connection.
Yeah.
And so going into it, you didn't like have much of a sense of him. So did you have an idea of like, oh, I think he's someone I could connect with, or you were just like,
I'm going to see how it goes.
Like, totally blank slate.
I think, well, he was attractive. I thought he was attractive. I knew that he, you know, was kind of athletic, and that's important to me. And, you know, lives on a lake. I love the water. And so I'm like, you know, I knew he had a dog. I saw a picture of a dog, and I have a dog. I love dogs. And so, you know,
you're like, there's enough of a seed. There's enough of something that maybe this is a person I could be.
I mean, you could see that he was, you know, a great dad and a grandfather, and I'm a great mother and a grandmother, glamma. So, you know, there's little things like that. Plus, I found him attractive, and
hey, that matters.
Yeah,
that matters a lot.
It matters a lot. I mean, my kids were like, you know, besides after pushing me out the door, basically, they're like, now have an open mind, you know, because they know me, because I'm like, no. But so they were like, just have an open mind, Mom. You don't make, you know, I have said this before. I think what I learned about myself on the show was that I don't have to have this person in my life feel every check every box and be everything I want. And I think I was trying to do that for so long with whoever I wanted to end up with, instead of just really concentrating on the important things in life and focusing on that. And, you know, I don't even say it's I'm in my last trimester. I mean, I'm 65 years old. I right now I just want to like laugh, have fun, enjoy somebody, make sure that he, you know, we sync on some certain levels that it's important to me, and just really enjoy life and enjoy family and love dogs. I mean, you know, I really
must love dogs.
I don't really need as much as I used to. And that's what I learned about myself on the show. I mean, everyone comes out of the show, I think, with certain things. And I learned that. I mean, because I really fell for Gary. And he's not the typical guy that I would normally end up with. You know, if I saw him in a bar, I probably talk to him. He's attractive and he's got a great smile and his eyes are beautiful. And he, you know, he made me laugh. I made him laugh. I love that. I love to laugh. I love humor. I come from a funny family and we laugh a lot. But he's just not the typical guy that I've been attracted to in the past. So I kind of like that I was attracted to him. And
oh, that makes so much sense. You're like, okay, I can have an open mind about what actually might make a fulfilling partnership. And I also think that's just like a healthy mindset for anyone dating at any age, like the idea that person doesn't need to fill every single thing in your life. Like I've heard you on other podcasts talk about the way that your friends and your children and other people in your life do a lot of those things for you. And a partner is just really one piece of that, like social community puzzle, I think.
That's completely right. You know, I do have my own life, and being single for a long time, you don't want to give some of that up now, you know, but you do want to share a lot of it with somebody. I mean, I want to share my life. Whether we're doing something or doing nothing, you know, and I do want to share it. I mean, my kids, I mean, and they're funny. They love being with me and they are my best friends, but there comes a time where they're like, okay, Mom. No, you can't go to this concert with me again.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we get back, more from our interview with Leslie Fima.
Can you keep up? I like, love it.
And we're back.
Did you expect that The Golden Bachelor would make as big of like a cultural splash as it did? Because I feel like it was such a wild phenomenon. Like so many people that were in my life that either had never watched The Bachelor or had fallen off of it years before were like, I'm back in. I'm so invested. I love the feelings that I'm getting from this show. Is that something that you anticipated?
No. I mean, again, I watched the show and I just who wants to watch a whole bunch of old people kiss? I really didn't think people wanted to do that, you know? But it turns out they did. And
they really did.
Yeah. And it freaks me out still because, you know, I mean, in Minneapolis, I'm a little bit of a celebrity now. I can't even go into Athleta anymore without having people want to, which happened yesterday. It happens all the time. But it's funny because a lot, I'd say 80% of these people are young. I mean, they're in their 20s. And what makes me really happy is they're saying, I watched this with my mom. And it just reminds me of me watching it, making my kids watch it with me. But, you know, now they're like watching it with their moms and my mom loves you. And oh my God, she's going to die when I tell her I met you today. And it just
I have to tell you, Leslie, like my parents watched your season and my mom and I were texting every week. She is like, I follow Leslie on Instagram. Like she, you know, like it really, you know, and I'm in my mid to late 30s, but it is this like it is this intergenerational point of connection. And I also think as a woman who's kind of facing that, like we're just on the edge of looking forward at that point in our lives, there was something really powerful about seeing this group of women, all of you guys framed as like full, lively, like romantic, sexual, exciting people, like full people. And I think that that's actually just not something that we see on TV very often.
I think that's true. And we are those. I mean, I feel like you inside of me. I feel like I'm in my 30s. I don't feel like I'm 65 and I don't act like I am most of the time. So it's hard when you're getting old and, you know, you do see the lines on your face and you maybe don't move as well as you used to and all that stuff. You know, I have to put my glasses on to see everything, you know, but I still feel young inside. And I know that, you know, the women and I, we talk so much about it and we all feel that way. You know, we all love life and we've had our strife and no one is immune to having problems with their kids or their parents. Or, I mean, my parents died young, but you know, I know what it's like to have aging parents and because my friends go through it and whatever it is. I mean, we have gone through so much more than bigger than, you know, feeling bad about a wrinkle on your face or things like that, you know? So I feel that we were good role models in a lot of ways for the younger generation.
Yeah. I think like often depictions that we get of older women are not like by and for real older women, you know, they're like scripted roles often in shows or movies not made by older women and, or they're, you know, they're not really realistic depictions. And so I think for a lot of us, it was, it was so inspiring to be like, oh, I don't have to be afraid of aging. Mm-hmm. It's something we all go through and it's not going to change me into an unrecognizable version of myself. And
no, I mean, we can't stop the process. I mean, we can.
Right. If we're lucky, help it, we get to age.
If we're lucky, we get to
age. Yeah. I mean, we can help a little bit, you know, with a lot of products or whatever, but it's still getting old. So that's all I can say. I don't know. I'm okay with it.
Yeah, it's a process for all of us. Like, yeah. I still feel like I'm 25, to be honest, but yeah, I know yeah. that I'm not anymore. And that's like the slow rolling, like, realization we're all having throughout our lives.
My daughter keeps saying, I'm going to be 33. And I'm like, so?
Yeah. Oh, but at the time, you're like, I still feel like I'm 33. 19.
I'm like,
how am I 33?
Never.
Let's talk a little bit more about the season before we move on to more present day, because we could talk about your season forever. We're not going to, but we want to talk about a few things. One thing that we really wanted to talk about was the fact that the show did kind of showcase your Jewishness. And I know that that's something that Emma had a really resonant response with. And that it was noticeable how, you know, your Star of David necklace was visible on the show. At one point, we saw you and Ellen and Susan and Teresa like in the pool doing the Hora and singing Hava Nagila.
My favorite moment of the season.
Yes.
That was a fun one.
Oh, so fun. And, you know, the Bachelor franchise is historically extremely Christian, extremely white. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you thought about going into being on this show? Like the fact that the franchise has this history and like your own identity and how it might fit into that?
I didn't really think about it that much. What happened was I never had a bat mitzvah. So when I was 13, my mom gave me a Star of David necklace. She goes, you don't get a bat mitzvah, but you get a Star of David necklace. Because I was a figure skater. So I skated that's what my thing was. You know, I skated all the time. And I didn't have time to go to Hebrew school and all that stuff. I had to choose, and that was my choice. But my religion is more spiritual than it is being religious. And I'm proud of my heritage and my Jewishness. And I love holidays. I've loved them when I was young. And now, you know, when I became an adult and a mother and a grandmother, I want to make memories for my children and my grandchildren. And I love doing that. But anyway, so I've worn my Star of David necklace since I was 12, different versions of it, of course, throughout the year, because, you know, they lose it or whatever, get different ones. But, and so it's just something I wear just to remind me daily of, you know, who I am, where I came from. You know, it's just there. So when I got to the show, I took it off. And because I thought maybe I shouldn't wear it. I don't know. But it felt odd and I felt very kind of naked without it. And then I did ask the producers, because some of the women had their, you know, crosses around their neck, and rightly so, just like I would want to wear my Star of David. And I asked them, I said, do you think I can wear my Star of David? I really feel, you know, naked without it. And they're like, absolutely. So I did. And that's how, you know, I just put it on, because that's who I am. Not because the other girls had their religious, you know, around their neck. It was just more of, I just wanted to wear it. I just wasn't sure how, you know, knowing the show is a little bit more Christian based, and I wasn't sure. And, you know, I didn't want to offend anybody. I didn't want to, you know, but I needed to be true to myself. And so they gave me the choice and I chose to wear that, my Star of David.
I love that. And like, yeah, as a Jewish viewer of this show, it was meaningful, not because it was some big statement, but because, as you said, it was just who you are, and that's part of you, and that's there. And like, I think that's any kind of representation that we see that we don't normally see feels very exciting to us. And that just felt notable to me. And then the Hava Nagila was just, it was again, just like this culturally specific moment that was so joyful. And I just love that they left that in.
I did too. I mean, we were going through music that, you know, we could have the rights to on film, because they were filming us. And I don't know. And someone said, Hava Nagila. I'm like, let's do it. Come on. We're in the water.
Amazing. Like, no one owns that.
I know, right? We couldn't even sing happy birthday, so I don't think.
Funny.
And so, you know, I'm a fitness instructor. And so I was doing like kind of water aerobics with the girls in the pool. And then they put on Habagita. I'm like, Han Van Aguila. And I'm like, let's go. Come on, girls.
Oh my God. That's so good. Yeah.
And it was cute because Teresa's not Jewish and she was doing it and Susan was doing it. And Ellen, I think Ellen's half Jewish and I'm Jewish. So we were like, you know, let's do this.
Well, that's why it was so great, because I knew, I was like, I don't think Teresa and Susan are Jewish, but they were in it. Like,
they were in it. Yeah. It was so cute. We were laughing so hard.
I'm not Jewish. My husband is Jewish. The Havan Agila is everyone's favorite part of the wedding. No one had more fun than anyone. We were all just like, this is the literal best thing we've ever done.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. So I'm like, we're just going to bring a little wedding-ness to the pool.
It's on theme. I love that.
Yeah.
Was your Jewish identity something that you discussed with Gary? Like, did you guys discuss religion?
Oh yeah, I did. It was a conversation we had, but it was also the same episode that I had my conversation about my hearing aids. Mm. So we had a birthday party for him and it was a really cute conversation. We're sitting in the back of a truck and we did talk about it and I told him and, he was great with it. And, you know, I said, I love celebrating, you know, both religions because my grandchildren are half Jewish and half not, and they celebrate everything. And so I said, Hanukkah is great. You get 8 presents. You get a present every day. And then I said, and they don't all have to be wrapped.
Very
and he liked that.
Big advantage.
We talked about it. He was fine with it.
On that note, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with more from our interview with Leslie Fima of The Golden Bachelor. Can you keep up? I like, love it.
And we're back.
We really enjoyed also your hometowns on the show. And a really fun thing about The Golden Bachelor is instead of meeting like protective parents, which we've seen a million times, it was so many protective children and grandchildren were like, how are you going to treat my grandma? And we loved meeting your kids on TV. Like, it was so obvious how much they love you, how much they support you. Mm-hmm. Do you think that it like changed your relationship with them or how they see you to get to see you in this very different context, like on a nationally televised dating show? Or to them, was it really just like, oh yeah, this is who we've always known her to be?
I think it's more the latter. They were just like, this is my mom. You know, they love me, you know?
Yeah.
If you ask any one of my 3 kids who their best friend is, they're all going to say me. And that's just who they are. But they were very, because when I came home with Gary, I was really happy. And they saw me happy and they loved that. I mean, you know, especially my son Eli, he's my youngest and he's very sensitive like me. And he was just so happy to see me happy. It just, you know, it was, yeah. And that part I loved. I wanted my kids to see me happy. You know, I mean, I'm a happy person, but I think seeing me happy with someone else, they haven't seen that. And, you know, I haven't dated a lot. I've had some long-term relationships, but it's been a while since they've seen that. And I think that was really made them, you know, happy for me.
Yeah. And I would imagine it's different seeing like being like a full adult and seeing your parent in that position versus being a younger person.
Exactly. And my brother's very protective.
Oh, we loved meeting your brother.
He gets stopped everywhere he goes. He goes, the people say, you're the brother. You're the brother.
Is he like everyone's so confused? He's like, oh my God.
I know. He forgets. He goes, I forget. This is what you have to deal with all the time. I'm like,
yeah. He's like, I don't know. I filmed like 2 scenes. Like what?
I know. Exactly. But he's been like my parents since I was 16, really. My parents died young. So he has kind of taken over all the other stuff. And he's only 7 years older than me. So it's not like, you know, but he really took, you know, the patriarch of the family, and he's took that seriously. So
that connection was really apparent between the two of you from like the little bits that we saw on the show, that you could just feel the love, the respect, the care that he has for you. It was really moving to watch.
Yeah, he's my rock. Yeah.
Yeah. How has he and how have your kids been doing since the show? Like, I'm sure they were very upset initially after the finale. Like, has that been something that you guys have been navigating as a family?
Yeah. I mean, especially when I got home, you know, obviously it was really hard. And my brother picked me up from the airport, and I was kind of a wreck. And it was a long trip home from Costa Rica. And he literally had to, like, you know, kind of put me to bed, and just, you know, he was there for me. And of course he was sad for me, you know? But, you know, I am a survivor, and I have bounced back from a lot of things in my life. And so they knew that I would just need a day or two, which I did. And then I just kind of brushed myself off and got back to work and, you know, surrounded myself with my family and my friends and my work. And, you know, of course it takes a while, but I think, you know, I did okay. I got through it.
Everything that we have seen.
Yeah.
You seems like you've done pretty well for yourself. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah.
You were really open on the show about the fact that you had been married and divorced twice. Mm-hmm. I'm curious how you feel like Gary and the show in general handled divorce on The Golden Bachelor versus the way that it handled widowhood.
Well, I don't want to say that I wish there was more divorced people on the show. I mean, you know, I feel like I was definitely in the minority, especially being divorced twice. And so that was a little kind of in my head a little bit, you know, and I don't know if it was like one of my producers, but someone said to me, you know, a loss is a loss. I mean, you know, obviously it's not like you lost a spouse to death, but, you know, I lost a spouse to another woman. I mean, you know, that isn't easy. And I didn't get married. I mean, my first marriage to Brad, who's still a really good friend of mine, by the way, we just got married too young. We were just too young. And
how old were you?
21, barely.
Oh, a baby. And,
yeah. I mean, I would never allow my children to get married at 21. What was my mom thinking? But she's like, just go. But, yeah, but we're very good friends, and we knew each other when we were, you know, 16 and 17. So it wasn't like, you know, we just, we had Zach, and we love Zach, and we, you know, helped raise together. We had parties for him together and all that stuff. So, but my second marriage, you know, I was in love, like head over heels in love with my ex-husband, David. And, you know, I didn't get married to him thinking I'm going to get divorced. That's not what I wanted. I wanted nothing more in my whole life is just to be a mother and a wife. And, I thought that was my job and I was going to be good at it. And, you know, but things happen and, you know, and we have two kids together and we communicate fine and everything's fine. We're planning a wedding for my youngest son in May. And, you know, we have a grandson together now. So, you know, things work out, just takes time. But, yeah, I feel like people think divorce is a bad word. And, you know, I felt I did get, you know, obviously there were some messages that I saw and some comments that she's divorced twice. She has no how to hold a marriage together. She does, you know, And first it was like, oh my God, I can't, you know, but then I'm like, okay, I can't look at this. So, you know.
Yeah, you're like, I can't take on other people's bad opinions.
No, like, I mean, they don't know me. They don't know what I've been through. And rightly so. But I, you know, I was in love with my husband, very much so. And, you know, just things happen. Life happens.
There is such a double standard with how we would treat or how the show and its audience would tend to treat someone who says like, oh, in my last relationship, my boyfriend cheated on me and left me for another woman versus a marriage. Then it's like the divorce, the word divorce does have such a stigma, especially in the franchise. And it's seems so
ridiculous,
like, immaterial to really the conditions of what led to what happened.
And it's funny because when you actually stop to think about it, there's probably more people that could relate with my situation because there has been, I mean, there are people, they don't have to get married to have, you know, infidelity in the relationships, whether you're a woman or a man, you know, two men, two women, doesn't matter. I mean, it happens. So probably more people related with my story than, you know, having to be a widow. So I'm just saying, because, you know, again, you don't have to be married to have that happen to you. But, you know, yeah, it was too bad. But at first I felt bad about it. And then I'm like, I can't feel bad about it. It's who I am. It's what makes me me, you know.
Good. Yeah. And I think you're right that like so many people watching have experienced divorce in some capacity. So like, or the end of just a very, very significant relationship. And so having those stories is super important.
Yeah. I mean, whether you're 18 or 65, I mean, you know, if you've had someone like somebody else, then, you know, you know what that feels like, you know, why not me? What did I do wrong? That whole thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we do have to talk about the end of your relationship with Gary. Mm-hmm. You've obviously talked about the way that on that final overnight date, what you and Gary talked about made you feel certain that you were going to be chosen. And definitely us as audience members watching that last day, we were like, well, and seeing what he was saying to you, we were like, well, it's Leslie. Can you shed any more light on what it was that he said to you off camera that made you so sure that it was you?
Well, I kind of stick by what I've been saying the whole time. I mean, what we talked about in the overnight was just really private. And there's certain things that I feel not comfortable sharing.
Of course.
Only because it was our private time. And, you know, it's like when he whispers something in my ear, I didn't want to share that. I mean, those are like, for me, now that I'm away from the show, those are things that I can take away and go, I only have that. No one else has that. And I kind of like that, you know, because you're so out there and millions of people are watching your whole thing on TV. So, but he did make me feel very confident. And I know that I've said this before. It's not that I'm not a confident person, but I just don't take things for granted. And I don't assume things throughout my life, whether it's anything. And the only time I did was then. And, you know, that's the hard part. Cause I really thought it was me. And I even said to the producers, I'm like, it's me. And they're probably going, never know, you know, but, so, you know, and because of that, I went into my day knowing that he was with Teresa completely happy.
Of course.
Scared, not worried, getting ready with my dress and all that stuff. So, it was a little bit of being blindsided. And that's why I think my reaction when he came back, well, I kind of knew, I just felt something was off, Like,
I was going to say that something that I think really resonated with a lot of us watching was seeing, like, I felt like I could see you start to realize something was off, and you are clearly such an intuitive person. You pay attention to the energy that the people around you are giving off. And I just, I could feel your emotions in that moment. Like, I think anyone who has been on the precipice of the end of a relationship, like, felt your pain in that moment. At what point did you really realize, like, okay, I see where things are heading and it's not good?
Well, I felt it going into meet his family, or not, more at the after meeting his family, when we sat on the
bench.
Mm-hmm. I felt it, but I think they maybe had cut it out, but I said, are you okay? And he goes, I'm just spent. And I completely understood, because I was exhausted and I didn't do another overnight. You know what I mean? And
no one's getting enough sleep on this show, from what we understand.
Yeah. No, it's just not. I didn't have my phone and my AirPods. And you know how I get back to sleep? I listen to podcasts.
Leslie, me too.
Emma would struggle in this environment.
Yeah,
so I used to put my AirPods in and pretend, because at least I'm used to having them in sometimes in the middle of the night.
They are noise canceling.
They are noise canceling. It did help when I was in the room with the three other women, by the way. but I was exhausted. So I just figured he must be completely exhausted. And so I kind of gave him a pass, and I thought everything's going to be better when I see him later tonight. And then when he came in to the room and we were having some wine, and I gave him a couple gifts, that's when I knew something was off. Because I mean, I know people go, how do you know him? You barely spend any time with him. Well, I knew him. I knew his ways and his looks and his laughs, and they weren't there. And I just knew something was off. But usually when you see the end of a relationship coming, you can feel it a little bit. Like, it's not just a train. It's kind of like a tug, 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 you know? But the last time I saw him, he was throwing me kisses goodbye. So, you know, after our overnight. So it was a little bit of it was hard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now we've all, I think so many people watching related to that sinking feeling, but we don't always get to see it unfold. Like, over the course of the show, there's that like blindsiding moment at the rose ceremony. Mm-hmm. And we had much more of a like relatable, raw experience shown with you. And one moment that really like resonated with the audience was when he was like having that conversation with you when he returned to the room, and you said, you know, this is how it always goes for me. And he said, no, don't think that. And you replied, of course, I can think whatever the fuck I want. Mm-hmm. That moment was like so resonant for so many people. Did it surprise you what a big moment that became?
Yeah, because to be honest with you, I didn't remember even saying, I didn't remember.
I'm sure.
Yeah. And I had no idea until I watched it back in front of everybody. I'm like, oh my God. That's what I said.
Wow.
I really tried not to swear a lot on the show.
It was really earned. It was earned.
But I did then. And, you know, I don't remember what I said. I just was kind of in it. And I was just like, at that moment, I do remember now when I, you know, obviously remember what I said, and looking back, I just remember going, just at that point, I was like, just please don't tell me what to do. You know, I don't need you telling me how to feel, you know, right now. And I think that's happened to me before, obviously, you know, oh, don't feel that way. Or, you know, you're a good person. It's not you, or all those things. After a while, you're just like,
save
shut
it
up. Yeah. I don't want to hear
you.
It. Yeah.
Well, there is that thing where it's like, where if you are the one who does the breakup, you kind of, you cede all rights to, to like controlling at all how the other person feels, right? Exactly. It's like, okay, well now it's your experience. Like I made this decision.
Yeah.
You're going to feel how you want to feel.
And it kind of like, here's the man telling me how I should feel after he just dumped me, you know?
Like, yeah, you're like, no fucking thank
you. That is not going to happen. That's not going to happen right now. So, I mean, it was familiar to me because I hadn't had a lot of luck. And sometimes when I happen to fall for somebody, that has happened to me before. I mean, I don't fall easily and I don't give my heart very easily. But then a few times where I have in my life, it has happened like that, you know, and I'm just like, what? And, you know, I was just a little,
One thing that we definitely wondered about as we were watching that final episode and your reaction at the end was just how, you know, it's so different from the classic Bachelor when these women are like 24 and they're like, when will it be my turn? Or like, well, I'm never picked. And you're like, okay, but you're a child. Like everything that's going to happen in your life still hasn't happened yet.
Exactly.
It felt like it hit more sensitively, like it hit more a sensitive part watching that in my heart, like knowing, you know, that you're in a different stage of life and you have had so many more experiences than most women that we see getting dumped on the show and saying those things. Like, do you think that it was a really different experience for you compared to a younger person on the classic Bachelor? Like, do you think that you left feeling hopeful about finding love in the future? Do you think that that, like, because of the life stage, that it felt really demoralizing to come so close and then have it taken away?
It felt demoralizing at first and for a while. Yeah. I don't feel like that today. Because I opened myself to someone that normally I wouldn't. I kind of imagined our life together a little bit. You know, you do go down that road a lot of times when you're, you know, falling for somebody. How would this be? How would that be? And we did talk about certain things. And when one time he said to me, if I'm eating broccoli and you come in a negligee and you want to go to bed, what are you going to do? Like, he had funny questions like that. I'm like, I'll sit and eat broccoli with you and then we're going to go to bed. I don't know. Like, you know, we got to give and take here. I mean, you know, it was, you know, Gary made me laugh and that's really important to me. And I made him laugh and I love that. I love making people laugh. And, you know, so I did, when I said this at the finale, I thought about like us walking our dogs and I couldn't wait him to show Minneapolis. And, you know, 2 minutes before he broke up with me, he goes, he talked about moving to Minneapolis. He didn't want to live downtown. I live downtown. I said, I'm not married to downtown. You know,
you were making like, real really plans. Looking. You were allowing yourself like to really indulge that, in that vision.
That night we are talking about it and how he loved restaurants and we have great restaurants here. And, you know, so it wasn't like,
that like makes it real.
Yeah.
I totally get that. That makes so much sense. You said you're not feeling that demoralization now, which is so wonderful to hear. How has your healing journey been going? Like, where do you feel like you're at now?
Oh, I feel like I'm great. I mean, you know, I've had some setbacks. I broke my elbow in October. I just got my plate and pins out the other day. So I have a little thing on me. Purple for Prince. No, I'm just kidding.
Our fun fact about you ever. iconic.
They asked me, they said, what color do you want? Blue, blue, blue. Purple. So I got purple. But I was drugged up at the time. So whatever. I've had a lot of setbacks in my life, you know, I know I've talked about this. My father died by suicide. My mom was my best friend. She had an aneurysm 1 minute, perfectly fine. The next minute gone. I was 25. I've had kids, you know, go through some treatments, and it's, you know, been a journey for them. My son, Zach, has been sober 7 years and he's doing great. And so, I mean, I have had things in my life, but at the end of the day, I mean, I love life. I love, what's the alternative? I mean, I have a beautiful family and a lot of love, and I live in an amazing town, and I have the most beautiful, wonderful friends. So I there's really nothing that's going to ever hold me down. I mean, is my guy out there? I hope so. I mean, I feel like he is.
Well, we're really,
we hope so too.
At the end of the day,
we hope so. We're rooting for you.
I feel like he is.
Also, I feel like you, it looks like your life is absolutely fabulous either way. So
yeah,
let's
totally
not put too much on that, you know, on that guy.
No, I mean, I make it. I mean, I do work at it. I don't sit around. I go, I do, I work, I do fitness retreats. I mean, I'm always, you know, I think life is too short. My mom died. She was 59 yeah. years old. And so when she died, I'm like, that's it. I'm going to live life to its fullest, you know, yeah. And it was a setback on the show. I mean, but you know, it's
in the
okay.
grand scheme of things. Yeah. You've overcome.
I mean,
much
I think
more.
Things always work out the way they're supposed to. That's how I feel. And, Teresa was one of my good friends. I mean, I loved her. Mm-hmm. We got along really well. And I mean, I'm happy it's her. I'm happy she's, you know,
yeah.
at the end of the day.
Do you guys still talk, or do you ever spend time with the two of them?
No, I haven't spent time with the two of them. I am going to the finale this coming week. So I will
Ooh,
see
so
them.
We'll get oh, to, okay. see, yeah.
Yeah.
to see you. Okay.
That's and great. I'm just going to be part of the audience and enjoy, mm-hmm. you know.
It's much more fun than being in the hot seat.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yes. Yes. For
Less
sure.
Less emotionally traumatic.
And you've already yeah. been part of this season, which we wanted to talk a little bit about because mm-hmm. we were so excited to see you pop yeah. up on our screens mm-hmm. for Fantasy Suites Week, giving some advice to Kelsey A. Mm-hmm. And, you know, connecting with her about losing your mothers, as you just discussed. Yeah. And I'm so sorry that happened mm-hmm. to you.
Thank you.
This conversation really touched me. I also lost my mom young, very mm-hmm. similarly to you. Actually, it was extremely sudden. Mm-hmm. From so like sorry. an aortic aneurysm. Oh. And it did really, you know, it affects you. Mm-hmm. But I, for some reason, this conversation, I felt like you really articulated it really well in a way that like made me emotional again, like how it is to go through dating and looking for a partner without someone like your mom there who you would yeah. expect to give you guidance. And you were doing mm-hmm. it without your dad as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you think that it affected you looking back to sort of as someone in her mid-20s be mm-hmm. out looking for love and like making a life without either of those people there?
Yeah. Well, it really affected me because after she passed away, well, I was pregnant and I was married to Brad and we were pregnant. And then I had a miscarriage, but I was 4 months pregnant. So it wasn't the easiest miscarriage.
Oh my God. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Sorry.
And my mom was there for me. And then, and my sister-in-law, my brother, Stuart, and my sister-in-law, Patty, were pregnant at the same time. So we were going to have babies together. And they were, and my mom was going to be a grandmother to two babies. And she was like, oh my God, you know, at that point you live, this is what you're living for. And then I lost my first one, and then my mom died like a month later. And so I just kind of suffered too. I wasn't really over just, I mean, at 4 months, you're already thinking about names and, you know, it's not the same as, you know, having a miscarriage at 4 weeks.
No, that's,
you know,
that's pretty far along. Yeah.
Yeah. And
it's been really hard.
And then of course, then my brother and Patty were so sad because now my mom's not going to see her first grandchild. And And so then Brad and I got pregnant about 9 months later again. And so I had to have my first baby without my mom. And that was really hard. I mean, I didn't have anyone to help me. And I didn't know what I was doing. I was 27 years old and I had no idea. And so that was really hard. And then, you know, let's fast forward. I'm going through a divorce without my mom. And then I meet David and, you know, would she maybe have stopped me from getting, I don't know. Like, I don't know. There was so much advice in my life that I missed, you know, from her. Yeah. 'Cause she was always so smart and she was always giving me great advice growing up. And she was my best friend. And she kind of was one of those moms where she loved to, like, you know, throw out those lines, you know, it's not your first rodeo, or, you know, funny things like that. You know, if they're talking good or bad, at least they're talking. I mean, you know, like, I don't know. I love that. Just, you know, I have those stuck in my head. Yeah. And like, but she, you know, she was just always there for me. And then she's not. And it's just, it's a completely different. And when you are in your mid 20s, you know, I'm thinking I'm 25, I'm old, but a guy looking back on it, I'm a child still. And, yeah. And I can't even imagine my children, who's now 30 and up, not having me in their life, you know, because we talk every day. And my mom was my last phone call at night, first phone call in the morning thing. And yeah, it was hard. It was really hard. And my heart broke for Kelsey. And, you know, at first I didn't understand. I thought, oh, they're going to have me talk to Daisy because we're both from Minnesota or something. But then I realized why, and it made complete sense. And I mean, she's just a beautiful girl inside and out. Aww. And I could see, you know, in her face too. It's just, when you don't have your mom, you know, it's hard.
Yeah. You could tell that it meant a lot to her to talk to someone who both understood that and also mm-hmm. someone who could bring some of that like motherly mm-hmm. advice to the table that she's missing. And and I thought this was also such a great part of the conversation, that you were like, I'm going to really step up and give her the honest advice that she needs to hear. And what we saw was you kind of telling her, maybe keep in mind that it might not be you, you know, don't mm-hmm. be blinded with confidence. Always know that it could be not you. And then if it is you, it's a happy thing. But if it's not you, you're a little more protected. And this was such an interesting part of the conversation. Often when former Bachelor stars come on to give advice, it's like, open up completely, like let mm-hmm. yourself go, which is of course very good for the show in many ways. Mm-hmm. What made you want to offer more like cautious advice to Kelsey?
Well, I did say some other things, you know. Of course, the conversation was a lot longer than it was shown because, you know, they can't show everything. And I think people took the advice like I was killing her spirit. And that's was so not my, oh my gosh. I mean, I never thought in a million years that would come out like that. And I would never do that to her. I mean, I looked at her the minute I met her. I'm like, oh, I mean, we looked a little similar. And she, when I was younger, mm-hmm. I had hair, like crazy hair like that. And I mean, everything, you know, she was just so beautiful and so sweet. And in my head, you know, I mean, you have to remember this was in like the beginning of November. So they probably didn't even know who we were, you know, they didn't see our show yet or anything. And, I didn't know any of the other girls on the show or anything. And I only, you know, of course I knew who Joey was and, you know, but I've never had a conversation with them or anything at that point. But I saw them together. Like the minute I looked at her, I saw them together. But then, you know, I had that too. I saw Gary and I together. Mm-hmm. And I imagined that life with him. And I just would never want anyone to feel like I felt. And I just was trying to protect her a little bit. And, you know, I think people took it the wrong way. And, you know, I just wanted her to, I wish somebody had said to me, don't get overconfident. It may not be you. I mean, you know, even that morning when I woke up and thought it was me, if somebody should have said, may not be, you know. I mean,
my first reaction was, oh, it's great that they're having people in to sound a note of caution, because the last like five Bachelor seasons have ended with women being completely blindsided because the leads sort of seemed to be promising them more than they could ultimately give them. You know, it's happened on a lot of recent Bachelor seasons. And I was like, we've seen so many seasons end with complete devastation. I'm glad that Kelsey's going to go into this a little more, you know, with her head screwed on straight. So
I know.
I was surprised by that reaction too. I mean, was this like the central topic of the conversation you had with her, or was it, it was just a small part of it?
Yeah. Of course.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about our mothers, you know, and I actually went in there and I said, I asked her, you know, have you told him that you love him yet? And she said, no. And I said, well, do you? And I believe, this is many months ago. And I believe she said, yes, I think I do. And I said, well, Kelsey, if you love him, you should tell him. Because this is the only time you're ever going to be alone without anyone there. And you should completely just put it all on the line and don't expect it back. Because I remember telling Gary I loved him. I did not expect him to say it back to me. I just wanted him to know. And I don't expect it back. Just, you know, say how you feel. I think, you know, it's just go in there and just. And just love every second of that overnight date. And then I probably said what I said. I mean, you know, the conversation, of course, is, you know, a much longer conversation than we're hearing and that I can remember.
Well, of course. But, of course. I can't remember conversations I had yesterday.
So. Exactly. I can't even remember our technical difficulties an hour ago.
Yeah, so, that was a long time ago.
Yeah. So I, you know, whatever. I just remember that there was other things set. Yeah.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And I think that's definitely what we assumed. Mm-hmm. Were you surprised watching it back the way that it was at least played in the episode, as if your warning had like shaken Kelsey's sense of confidence? Like, were you surprised that's how it was played narratively?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I think I heard my name four times throughout the episode. And I turned to my friend who I was watching with. I'm like, oh, I know. I see what's going on here. It wasn't the best week for me.
But, I'm so sorry, Leslie.
We
loved watching that conversation, truly. And it seemed, everything you said to Kelsey really seemed like it came from a place of love and care and like both wanting her to be okay. And that's certainly how we...
It is the same thing that parents often say during hometown dates. You know,
I would have said that to my daughter. I say those things to my kids all the time. And so I guess it's a train you can't stop. Once you're a mother and you're, you know, I have children her age or, you know, close to that age. And I give them advice all the time. Not that they take it or listen, but
but it's out there.
I get it, unsolicited or not. You know, they're gonna have to. If it goes in one ear and out the other, maybe it sticks. And
it's somewhere stuck in there.
Exactly.
So we always do with parental advice. It definitely like wedges its way in there somewhere.
Yeah. So I went into mother mode, I guess, and you know,
I loved it.
Just looking at that beautiful face of hers and that beautiful smile. I kind of just started.
Yeah. How did the conversation end? Did it seem like things were she was in a good headspace?
Yeah. It seemed like she was great. And
yeah,
we hugged and I just, I just, you know, I told her how much I enjoyed meeting her and, you know, that she's just a beautiful person. And I was so happy to meet her. So
have you chatted with her since?
Yeah, I have. I mean, via text, but yeah, she's amazing. I mean, she's so sweet and so kind. And I don't know. I really, really enjoy her. And I mean, all the girls are the ones that I've met and talked to. I really, you know, I love Maria too. I think she's amazing. And
a great group.
It's a great group
this season.
Yeah. We're like, wow, Joey has great taste.
Yeah. and he's such an amazing guy. I just adore him. Yeah. He's such a sweetheart. And I texted him last week and he got back to me. Such a sweetheart. I was feeling bad because then I leave and, you know, we all don't know what happens. And I'm like, did I ruin things? I'm scared.
No. Yeah. You're in limbo just like everyone else.
Yeah. And so
That's stressful.
It was stressful. Yeah. But I think everything will work out fine. And Kelsey was just very reassuring to me. So
good.
I'm glad.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was curious because Joey seems to be handling things pretty well coming out of Fantasy Suites, which is when basically every recent Bachelor season has imploded. Hit the skids. So I was wondering if you were able to give Joey advice before this season. Or if you had any chance to be like, maybe don't get the women's hopes up too high, you know, before Fantasy Suites.
Yeah, I did not give him advice. I was just hoping, and I was hoping, but also knowing who he is, I kind of knew that he wasn't going to just throw things out there just to hear himself talk or... You know what I mean? I mean, I knew that if he was going to say his feelings, they were going to be for real, you know, and not just tell everyone that he loves them I could tell he was that kind of guy. And because he's been through this process before and he knows what it feels like. I mean, he was in my shoes. And
it's true. It gives you some empathy.
Yeah.
Speaking of ways in which this role can bring you empathy and perhaps make you a really excellent lead of a different show. What are your thoughts on the Golden Bachelorette?
You know, I'm glad that they're going to do it. I think, you know, we women need a chance to make a choice. I always say I want someone to choose me, but I want us to choose each other. You know, basically. And that's really what it's about. You need to choose each other. And I think it's, you know, I think the casting for our show was amazing. And, you know, out of 30 or 35,000 women, they really got the casting down. I think I'm not just talking about myself, but all my friends.
They nailed casting. Like, we are truly obsessed with every single woman who was cast on Golden Bachelor. And
we all have these amazing qualities and we're all different and we all bring different things to the table. And we just love each other so much. You know, I love them.
Oh, I'm so happy that you guys are close in real life. That makes me so happy.
We are. And will they find that with the men? I mean, I think they will. And maybe it'll be a little bit more, you know, I don't know if they're going to find a lot of guys that want to sleep in bunk beds. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know. It's going to be very interesting to see who they get.
Yes.
And, you know, out of all the men in this country, and maybe in Canada too, they'll find.
Expand the reach, you know, go international. I know. We can bring them in.
I like the French. Yeah. No. whoever they get, I, you know, they only need whatever, 22. I mean, there's got to be, you know, I don't know how many they're going to have.
I'm sure they can do it if they really put their minds to it.
Yeah. It's a big country. They'll find. Yeah.
Exactly. There's a lot of people. Would you consider being our first Golden Bachelorette?
I would consider it. I would be honored, but again, I don't know. You know, I haven't heard, but Yeah, I mean, I think it would be, I definitely, you know, it's just kind of one of those things where I learned a lot. Now I can go, you know, if I did this, I could go into it with a much better headspace and knowing what's in front of me, kind of like Joey. And a lot of the, like Trista, like back, you know, way back. I think it's easier, you know, when you've been through it a little bit. So whoever they pick from our show will have some experience. If they pick somebody from a show, they may pick someone brand new. I don't know. But that is an advantage, is having some experience along the way.
Well, we would love to see you or another woman from your season in that role, because we just really fell in love with all of you.
Yeah.
Before we let you go, we just wanted to know, what do you think the Bachelor franchise should take away from the wild success of the Golden Bachelor and the kind of wild popularity of your group of women?
I think that they just, first of all, just take away that you don't have, I mean, again, I love the show, but you don't have to have 25 to 30 year olds to have a good show. I mean, there's plenty of people out there in their 50s that want love, and, you know, they're not golden, but maybe do different ages. And I mean, my son is 37 and he's single. You know, he's too old to be the
if
Bachelor.
If any of our listeners want to slide into the DMs of Leslie's son.
He's adorable. He lives in Chicago. But, you know, I'm just saying there's different ages. And I think they need to know now that it could work for different ages. The pre-golden, the millennial golden, I don't know, whatever they want to call it. But it doesn't have to be just the youngins anymore.
Oh, I love that.
Young people are not totally the only interesting people.
Exactly. I mean, you know, see, I think that's good. They started with the golden and now they can work their way down.
Yeah. Give us one for every like micro generation. We are ready. We've officially aged out of The Bachelor. So we're now, you know,
we could do an early middle age Bachelor.
Yeah, we would
love
to see that. Yeah. Like, you know, your son can be on it. I would love to watch your son on. Like, that's great. Yeah, let's do it.
I don't think, I'm not sure Zach would do that, but I'm just saying.
That's what they say until they find out that you've applied for them and the producer's calling and they're like, oh, well, maybe I'll consider
it's
it.
It's really
that would be the that would be the ultimate I got you back.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Leslie, thank you so much for joining us. We're really so appreciative of you taking the time and we're just big fans and we hope we get to see more of you.
I'm really big fans of you guys too. So thank you so much. You helped me fall asleep in Costa Rica in January with my podcast and my earbuds.
Oh my God. That's
I had to share a room with my good friend, but anyways, I usually
that's
listen to crime
thing.
But I needed a dose of you guys.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Oh my God, I'm truly so honored. We just adore you, and it's so nice to get to chat with you.
Yeah, you too, guys. You too.
Well, that was fun and thrilling. Leslie's so great.
I know. I mean, they say never meet your heroes, but if it's Leslie, you can, and it's fine.
Then it's allowed. And she, too, has done nothing to disabuse us of our raging crush on Joey. So won't someone at some point put us out of our misery? I guess not. On that note, that is it for this episode of Love to See It with Emma and Claire.
Love to See It is produced by us, Claire Fallon and Emma Gray, and Stitcher. This episode was edited by Talon Stradley. Our theme music is by Tamar Habib, and our art is by Celine Chang.
If you like our show, please remember to follow us, rate us 5 stars, leave a review, and of course, tell all of your friends about our show.
If you want to get in touch, you can email us at claireandemmapod@gmail.com.
You can also find us on TikTok at Love to See It Pod and Instagram at claireandemmapod. And you can find our newsletter, Rich Text, on Substack at claireandemma.substack.com. I'm also on social media at EmmaLadyRose.
And I'm at Claire E. Fallon. We'll be back soon.
Stitcher.